the headlines. Iran's leader officially endorses Ebrahim Raisi as the 8th president of the Islamic Republic. Iran's incoming president Ebrahim Raisi pledges to lift U.S. sanctions on the country and improve people's living conditions. And the UN warns about the grave situation of civilians in Afghanistan's Helmand amid ongoing fighting between Taliban militants and government forces there. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. Iran's Islamic Revolution leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has endorsed Ebrahim Raisi as the country's new president in a ceremony in Tehran. In a mandate read out during the ceremony, the leader said that the new president should work to remove obstacles to production and to strengthen the national currency. Later, Ayatollah Khamenei thanked people for their turnout in the June presidential election, despite enemies' propaganda to persuade them to sanction the vote. The leader also called on the new president to stay true to his election pledges and to use domestic capabilities to tackle problems. Ayatollah Khamenei also said that the new president should move quickly to form his cabinet. The leader said that the economy is a significant issue. He added that the new government needs to have plans in place and to move accordingly if it seeks to tackle existing problems. Iran's new president, Ebrahim Raisi, has vowed to rebuild public trust and bridge the gap between the government and people during his tenure.
What has caused the most problems, in addition to the harm inflicted to people's livelihoods and businesses, is the damage to public trust. People sought a government to repair this damage, to restore their trust and narrow the gap with the government. A good relationship between the government and people can resolve problems.
Raisi made the comments after he was confirmed as Iran's 8th president. He said the Iranian nation demanded change, justice, and an end to corruption through their votes in the June 18 presidential election. He added that change is necessary and inevitable, and that his government plans to make it happen. Raisi called on the elites, officials, and people to play their part to help bring about that change. The 61-year-old president also noted that he would certainly try to get U.S. sanctions removed, but would not tie people's livelihoods and the economy to that aim. Iran has warned of a crushing response to any threats against its national security after the U.S. and the U.K. accused Tehran of being behind a recent strike on an Israeli-managed vessel off Oman.
The United States and Britain have intensified their anti-Iran rhetoric over last week's deadly attack on an Israeli-managed oil tanker off the coast of Oman without providing any substantial evidence. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken claimed that Washington is confident that Iran conducted the attack on the MT Mercer Street and vowed, quote, an appropriate response. British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab also said UK assessments had concluded that it was highly likely that Iran used one or more drones to carry out the attack which killed a Briton and a Romanian. Iran, which has rejected similar accusations from Israel over the attack, came down on top American and British diplomats.
Iran strongly regrets and condemns the baseless accusations made by the British Foreign Secretary against Iran, which were repeated by the U.S. Secretary of State in the same context and contained contradictory, false, and provocative accusations.
The accusations also drew a strong reaction from an informed source close to the Supreme National Security Council of Iran.
Iran considers the threats of Western officials and the Zionist regime to be more of a propaganda gesture. But any moves against Iran's interests and its national security will be met with a crushing and firm response, and Washington and London will be directly responsible for the consequences.
Earlier, resistance sources told Iran's Al Alam Arabic News Network that the attack was in retaliation for a recent deadly Israeli airstrike on an airport in Syria's Qusair region. Astonishingly, Washington and London have thrown their weight behind Israel while they have produced no proof of Iran's involvement in the attack. However, they have turned a blind eye to Israel's hostile actions against Iran, including attacks on a dozen Iranian oil tankers, which was revealed in a report by the Wall Street Journal in March, and the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists. Above all, Israel's frequent attacks on Syria and the Gaza Strip, as well as its atrocities in the Palestinian territories, have been ignored by the international community. It seems that Britain and the U.S. have given Israel carte blanche to commit crimes with impunity. The West's unwavering support has emboldened Tel Aviv to push ahead with its crimes, but the attack on the Israeli managed ship and the regime's latest defeat in the war on Gaza at the hands of Palestinian resistance groups spotlighted the regime's weakness. It shows that the era of hit and run for Israel is coming to an end.
The UN has raised the alarm over the situation of civilians in Afghanistan as fighting rages on between government troops and Taliban militants. The UN mission in that country says indiscriminate gunfire and airstrikes are hurting civilians the most. It voiced deep concern over the damage to and the seizure of health facilities and civilian homes. Taliban militants have stepped up their attacks in Afghanistan since May, seizing control of much of the rural areas. Over the past 3 days, they have been fighting in Lashkar Gah, the capital of Helmand province. According to the UN mission, 10 civilians have been killed and dozens wounded. The Taliban have seized over a dozen local radio and TV stations in Lashkar Gah. In another major city, Herat, government troops repulsed the Taliban assault. Turkish firefighters keep battling wildfires in the country's south 1 week after they engulfed 3 coastal towns there. Authorities say that thousands of firefighters, backed by planes and helicopters, are currently on duty. Several countries, including Iran, have already sent firefighting planes to put out the flames. So far, 8 people have been confirmed dead. Officials say that the blazes were fanned by temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius, strong winds, as well as low humidity. They say the heat wave exacerbated the fires after months of exceptionally dry weather in Turkey's southwest. The wildfires are the worst that the country has seen in a decade. The Lebanese Prime Minister designate says that the task of forming a new government will take much longer than what he had expected. Earlier, we discussed the issue in our news review program. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Lebanese Prime Minister designate says that the pace towards the formation of a new government is slower than what he had expected.
Frankly, with regard to the government, I was hoping the pace would be faster. It's going a bit slow. We wanted to form a government and announce it to the Lebanese people before August the 4th. August the 4th is a disaster that fell upon Lebanon and all the Lebanese people.
Najib Mikati made the remarks following a meeting with President Bashar Aoun. He also said that his efforts to form a new cabinet will not be open-ended. Mikati was tasked with forming a government after former Premier Saad al-Hariri failed to muster support despite months of efforts. Lebanon has been run by a caretaker administration since a huge blast devastated Beirut's port in last August. The Mediterranean nation has been struggling with a crippling financial crisis that has pushed half the country's population into poverty. The ongoing political deadlock has further worsened Lebanon's already faltering economy. Correspondent Mariam Saleh joins us from Beirut to give us the latest, and we also have Elijah McNear, who's a journalist and political analyst, joining us from Brussels. Okay, Mariam, over to you. Tell us why Najib Mikati, in a statement just hours ago, said that the formation of a cabinet is slower than what he had expected.
Well, we know that these talks take time usually. We never have a government that is formed in Lebanon that takes less than a month. He was hoping for less time, but here we're just talking about a week. He was hoping for something. I think that this is being the result of perhaps more pushing from the foreign sides like France and so on. They're pushing for a government before the 4th of August, before the international conference that will be held for the sake of Lebanon. That is almost impossible because you have several details that need to be agreed upon, and we have issues that now seem to be a little bit more flexible than before. What they're trying to agree on specifically, Prime Minister Designate and President Michel Aoun, is how the cabinet will be distributed. And we're talking here about confessional distribution. And that is an issue that has been a tradition inside Lebanon, although the Constitution stipulates that we end this sectarian system. However, this continues because there are certain groups that don't want to be considered minorities or don't want to lose their power in the government. So basically what they've agreed on is that we have the heavyweight ministries will be given to the bigger sects. You have, for example, 5 ministers for the bigger sects like the Maronite Christians, the Sunni Muslims, the Sunni Shiites. And then you have these smaller groups like the Armenians and Druze. They take less number of ministers. We also have an issue which is very significant, is that we always had specific ministries given to specific sects. Like, for example, you had the interior ministry that was always given to the Sunni Muslims. And that is something that President Michel Aoun has been opposing. But these are some details that they could probably overcome, but it's not very clear. It's always 50% chance that you don't see a government and you see Miqati resigning, and that could be possible, but they're giving a chance. They're going to meet again on Thursday. All of this comes in light of the fact that Lebanon's ready to commemorate the first anniversary of the most catastrophic event in Lebanon, we can say the 4th of August explosion.
So you got all these challenges, Elijah Magnier, obviously, that Najib Miqati is facing. What do you think are the chances that Miqati is approaching this in a form and manner that does not have that sense of urgency that we see Lebanon needs to have? And what are the chances of Miqati, I mean, he's done it before, perhaps coming up short in whatever respects and then calling it quits?
Thank you for having me. I think the chances of Miqati to resign are very high. The main problem today is the interior ministry. President Michel Aoun is insisting on giving the interior ministry to the Maronite Christians because there are the elections, the parliamentary election in the spring 2022. And Miqati is insisting, like his predecessor, Prime Minister Hariri, to give the interior ministry to the Sunni rather than the Maronite. And President Aoun is saying, as the Shia speaker, Nabih Berri, is insisting in having the finance ministry for the Shia, therefore it is up to him also to insist on the interior ministry. And because President Aoun will come to term in office, and because former Minister Gibran Basil, wants to be part of the political arena and wants to secure himself, perhaps as a new president of Lebanon, he wants to be able to have a strong leverage on the interior ministry. This is the main debate that's happening today between the Sunni prime minister and the Christian president. And they're not going to come to a term, they're not going to agree. It's very obvious that the president is insisting on his position and the prime minister is insisting because he also wants to have enough support for his group in the forthcoming parliamentary elections. And this is not going to be resolved, no matter how the intervention from the European community or the Americans on Lebanon. It is an internal matter between the Sunni and the Christians, and each one wants the same position, and they're not ready to let go. And this is we are in Lebanon in a kind of impasse and going nowhere. And the previous prime minister needed 8 to 9 months and offered his resignation because he didn't find a solution for this dilemma. And I don't think Najib Miqati will manage to do so.
Elijah Magnier, thank you so much for your contribution. Journalist and political analyst from Brussels. And with that, we come to an end for this news review. Welcome back. Yemen's armed forces, backed by local tribes, have made new gains in the oil-rich province of Ma'arib. The Yemeni army has advanced from several directions, capturing strategic hilltops near the capital city of Ma'arib. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more.
New advances have been made by Yemen's armed forces, backed by local tribes, toward the oil-rich province of Ma'arib to liberate it from the Saudi-backed forces. The recent advances were made in conjunction with a major victory of the Yemeni army against the Saudi-backed militant groups in Al-Baida province.
Ma'arib is the center of the mobilization of the enemy forces, and therefore the Saudi-led coalition tried to distract the Yemeni army by opening other fronts, as happened in Al-Baida. But the Yemeni army is fully aware of all the evasions of the enemies. Ma'arib is now surrounded from all sides, and we control all the mountainous heights and strategic points overlooking Ma'arib. There is a small area in Bayhan. If the Yemeni army takes control of, supplies will be completely cut off to the enemy.
Military experts said the Yemeni army attacked the Saudi-backed forces in the Baqatha area and Rahaba Directorate of Southern Marib, as well as Al-Bilq al-Qibli Mountains overlooking the western neighborhoods of the city of Marib. The Yemeni army, the experts said, is now surrounding the city from all sides.
Our forces managed to control the most important mountains and hills in Marib, and the consecutive victories in Al-Baida gave our forces an advantage in encircling Marib and besieging it from all sides. We have been able to liberate most of the southern and western regions. The battle is settled in favor of the Yemeni army, and the enemy is in a dire state.
For many months now, the Yemeni army has intensified its operations to take control of strategic Marib province. Observers say Yemen's army has made remarkable advances against the Saudi-backed forces, meaning that Saudi Arabia is up to lose its last stronghold in northern Yemen.
Yemenis say their army will eventually liberate Marib from the Saudi-backed forces and flip the table over Saudi Arabia and its allies. They believe that this is the only way to push Riyadh to stop its years-long war and siege and accept the political solution. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the U.S. has surpassed the grim milestone of 35 million. According to Johns Hopkins University tally, more than 613,000 people have also died from the disease in the country. California has become the first state to top with 4 million cases. Florida, where the governor has made mask and vaccination mandatory, also witnessed one of the worst outbreaks, accounting for about a quarter of the country's COVID hospitalization cases. Doctors, or Democrats, that is, are piling fresh pressure on the White House to renew a pandemic-related residential eviction moratorium after lawmakers failed to extend the ban before its expiry of the weekend. Earlier, U.S. House Democrats called on the administration of President Joe Biden to immediately extend a nationwide ban on housing evictions that expired on Saturday. Biden had asked Congress to extend the deadline on Thursday amid a surging Delta variant. But Congress failed to act after Republican House members blocked a Democratic-led bid. The House has already left for a six-week summer recess, and it remains unclear whether the administration could extend the moratorium using executive powers. Over 15 million Americans face evictions as they are currently behind on their rental payments amid COVID restrictions. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khomeini guided the Iranian nation to determine their own fate. June 4, 2021. The televised speech delivered on June 4, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the 32nd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Greetings be upon him. In another sermon, the commander of the faithful says that one of the reasons why he accepted governance was, and if there had been no pledge of Allah with the learned to the effect that they should not acquiesce in the gluttony of the oppressor and the hunger of the oppressed, I would have cast the rope of caliphate on its own shoulders. Nahjul Balagha, Sermon number 3. In other words, God the Exalted has taken the word of the learned not to accept social drifts and social inequalities. Later on, I will expand on the role of the learned and ulama, since it is because of these inequalities some die of gluttony and some of hunger. The Arabic word ulama either means a scholar as a privileged class of society who have a heavier duty in this regard, or it means the learned and those who have general knowledge of something, because naturally those who do not know of something are not responsible towards it. Those who are aware of something are naturally responsible towards it. So this is a collective responsibility. Now, how should this responsibility be carried out? This varies in different times. Today, it is manifested through participation in elections. And on another day, it will be manifested in a different way. So there is a responsibility. This is a responsibility on the one hand and a right on the other hand. The right to determine one's own fate. Humans are free to choose. Do not be the slave of others, for Allah had made you free. Najul Balagha, letter number 31. This was said by the commander of the faithful. You should not be a slave to others because God has made you free. You should choose on your own. You are free to choose your fate. This is one of the obvious points in Islam.
An Israeli petroleum products tanker managed by Israeli-owned Zodiac Maritime came under attack off the coast of Oman on Thursday. The London-based company later claimed that two crewmen, a Briton and a Romanian, had been killed in the assault. The US, Israel and their allies rushed to point the finger at Iran for the attack, while the official investigation has only begun and is not completed yet. Meanwhile, a source close to the resistance axis said the attack on the Mercer Street tanker was a retaliation for Israeli aggression in Syria, particularly the latest attack on Daba Airport that left two resistance forces dead. In recent months, several other Israeli ships have been targeted in various maritime routes across the world. Earlier in the month, a fire broke out on an Israeli-owned cargo ship after it was struck by an unidentified weapon in the northeastern Indian Ocean. Back in February, an Israeli-owned ship was hit by an explosion in the Sea of Oman. In April, another Israeli ship came under attack off the coast of the UAE.
Resistance access won't permit Israelis to commit any crimes without retaliation, whether from the Yemen or Lebanon or Syria or Palestine or Tehran or any place of the resistance axis. So I guess they have to expect that the resistance forces can reach them anywhere. So they are playing losing game with the resistance access, whether when they attack at Syrian borders or the Iraq-Syrian borders or at Tehran when they commit assassinations or do any aggressions against this power. Now the balance of power is for the sake or for the interest of the access of resistance.
The retaliatory attack has exposed the vulnerability of Israeli entities in the region and sent a strong message to Israel that the resistance front will not allow the Tel Aviv regime to commit crimes with impunity. Western countries have condemned the latest attack on the Israeli-owned ship off the Oman coast while they have always shut their eyes to Israel's crimes. Thousands of Syrians have died since the outbreak of the Western-backed war in 2011, and millions more are suffering due to the crippling sanctions and economic war imposed on Syria by the US government. That's why Washington's ally, the occupying regime of Israel, has attacked Syria on a continual basis. Also, the Syrian government blames the Israeli regime and its Western regional allies for aiding Takfiri terrorist groups wreaking havoc in the country. The latest attacks on Israeli ships come against the backdrop of Tel Aviv's various assaults on cargo ships across the Persian Gulf region and elsewhere. A Wall Street Journal report in March revealed that Israel had systematically struck at least 12 Iranian ships. Israel is also responsible for several instances of acts of sabotage against Iran's nuclear program over the past decade, including attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities and assassination of its scientists.
A root cause of the tension, the deplorable level of tension in the Middle East that the world has been witness to for many decades now, is the fact that Israel acts with impunity. Israel is given a blank check, so to speak, year on year from Washington and London to do as it pleases in the Middle East. If America and Britain truly respected international law, if they truly respected the Charter of the United Nations, and if they truly respected the concept of state sovereignty, then they would put an end to Israel's flagrant violations of international law.
The international community's silence in the face of Tel Aviv's crimes is a result of the U.S. shielding of the illegitimate regime of Israel. Tel Aviv has for long been able to get away with its crimes without any prosecution. However, the latest move by the resistance axis shows that Tel Aviv's hit-and-run tactic is no longer useful. Now, it must face the music and taste its own medicine.
On Thursday, Israel attained observer status at the African Union after nearly 20 years of lobbying. Making the move official, Israeli ambassador to Ethiopia, Burundi, and Chad presented his credentials to Moussa Faki Mohammed, the chairman of the African Union Commission, at the bloc's headquarters in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
But for African countries, Palestine is now no longer a priority. Unfortunately, for some Arab countries that have turned their back to Palestine, this is the same.
The move was met with harsh criticism from Palestinian resistance groups and several African nations. In a letter to the chairperson of the African Union, head of Hamas political wing Ismail Haniyeh said the decision contradicts the principles of the organization. He added that the move deals a heavy blow to the Palestinian people and their legitimate rights. Haniyeh called on Faki to reverse the decision, indicating that it does not reflect the truth of the stance of the Union toward the Palestinian cause. South Africa also fiercely objected to the move by the Union. It said the AU Commission made the decision unilaterally without consulting its members.
Now, none of the member states were officially consulted, except those that are probably pro-Israeli. The pro-Israeli ones are well known. It's Kenya, it's Tanzania, it's Rwanda, Togo, Cameroon. These are the countries that are backing this move.
The South African Foreign Ministry has called the AU's move, quote, incomprehensible and inexplicable. The South African government said the African Union's decision is even more shocking in a year in which oppressed people of Palestine were hounded by destructive bombardments and continued illegal settlements of the land. It was referring to Israel's 11-day war on the Gaza Strip in May that killed over 250 Palestinians, including 66 children. The war broke out after the regime's decision to evict several Palestinian families from their homes in the East Al-Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah.
Now, South Africa had been preceded by Algeria, and in Algeria a week ago was up in arms at this decision without having been consulted, and said it was contrary to the charter of the Africa Union, that the charter does not allow apartheid states, a state that practices racism as its official policy, to be part of as an observer, and that commits atrocities against an occupied population. And today, Namibia has joined South Africa.
Israel previously held observer status in the predecessor organization of African Unity until 2002, when the organization was disbanded and replaced by the AU. Pro-Palestine language is typically featured in statements delivered at the AU's annual summits. Palestine already has observer status at the African Union. Besides, the United States, Israel's closest ally, also operates in Africa under the pretext of fighting terrorism there. However, local sources say civilians have been the main victims of the attacks conducted by U.S. forces.
In fact, even in on the southern border of Syria, in the Quneitra region, Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra, who are a terrorist organization fighting against the Syrian government, have been assisted, aided both militarily, financially, logistically by Israel. So, I mean, this is, of course, just diplomatic talk.
That underlines the risk for Africa to have a possible Israeli military presence, as the Israeli regime is already facing a probe over war crimes committed in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank.
Ties between the United States and Russia are far worse than strained. The two have been on a confrontational path for a very long time. Tensions have been deteriorating over the past years after a series of tit-for-tat actions that have left bilateral diplomatic ties in tatters. Such tit-for-tat actions, like consulate closures or expulsions of diplomats, have made it difficult to even conduct basic bilateral diplomacy. The lack of proper diplomatic contacts between the two rivals has increased the risk of miscalculation that could lead to a potential disaster. Recently, Russia's top diplomat warned that tensions between Washington and Moscow were getting close to a dangerous confrontation. The two sides say they want to prevent any such scenario. This week, diplomats from the U.S. and Russia sat down for talks on strategic stability. The talks in Geneva were arranged in June when U.S. President Joe Biden met his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. Moscow and Washington have deep differences over a host of issues, including the situation in Ukraine, arms control, human rights, and cybersecurity. Observers believe such differences have their roots in the geopolitical rivalry between the two major nuclear-armed states.
I think that what's happened in the last 20 years under Putin's basic leadership, I think for the last 20 years, has been a resurgence of Russian power, of Russian technology, of the place of Russia in the world. And as a major country, the United States doesn't like that.
Can the ongoing diplomatic effort help reduce tensions and pave the way for cooperation? The meeting on Wednesday was the first in a series of planned talks aimed at enhancing communication and reduce the possibility of missteps. The delegations were headed by U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman and the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov. The U.S. side called the discussions professional and substantive. The Russians said they were satisfied with the conclusions and that America showed readiness for constructive dialogue. But despite the positive signs, controversial comments by the U.S. president drew condemnation from Moscow. In an address to national intelligence officers, Joe Biden accused Russia of trying to interfere in the 2022 U.S. midterm elections. He warned that an escalation in cyber attacks could lead to war. Biden also said Russia has nuclear weapons and oil wells, and nothing else to earn money from. The U.S. president claimed this economic weakness makes Russia even more unpredictable and dangerous. The Russians were quick to respond. The Kremlin said Biden's statements showed America's erroneous understanding of modern Russia. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Moscow regrets that America is more of an adversary than a partner, despite the Russian government showing political will to normalize ties. Observers believe the latest exchanges further reveal the depth of distrust and deep differences between Washington and Moscow.
Russians have begun to reassert their normal geographic dominance in the area. And in particular, this was true with Ukraine. And, you know, so can you imagine the situation if the Russians had on the Canadian border, you know, an army? We would freak out. Well, the Russians feel the same way about NATO being in the middle of Europe now. And they felt very, very betrayed by the fact that NATO expanded, because they felt they had a deal in the 1980s with Gorbachev that that wouldn't happen. And so they're upset about that and have been very clear about that.
Problems that have soured bilateral relations are many. And both sides seem unwilling to back down when it comes to strategic issues. The upcoming talks will probably show whether the two sides are serious enough to resolve their problems.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said that one key lesson for future administrations to learn from the experience gained during the tenure of outgoing President Hassan Rouhani is that there is no benefit in putting one's trust in the West. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks in a meeting with the members of President Rouhani's administration. He said it was manifested during the tenure of this administration that nothing can be gained from putting one's trust in the West. The leader added that domestic programs should in no way be tied to Western states under any circumstances due to the proven failure of such an approach.
Iran's ballistic missile program and Iran's regional role have nothing to do with the original JCPOA or United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231. They are simply irrelevant. And so to the extent that the United States continues to attempt to utilize maximum pressure to bring in irrelevant issues such as ballistic missiles and Iran's regional role, I believe that we will very soon reach this impasse and that the Raisi administration will bring an end to this charade in Vienna.
Making a reference to the ongoing talks in Vienna, Austria, to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, Ayatollah Khamenei acknowledged that endeavors made by Iranian diplomats, saying, however, that Americans insisted on their hostile stance against Iran and did not move even one step forward during the talks. The leader denounced the U.S. attempts to add new terms to the agreement to push Iran to begin talks on other issues. He said by adding such a clause, the Americans are seeking to gain an excuse for further meddlesome acts regarding Iran's missile program and regional issues.
If the talks in Vienna aren't already at an impasse, I believe that this is where we're going to be heading very soon if the United States continues to refuse to return to its responsibilities and its obligations under the agreement and instead attempts to utilize the illegal terrorist sanctions and maximum pressure campaign of the Trump regime in Vienna to acquire leverage over Iran in the negotiations, specifically regarding issues that have nothing to do with the JCPOA.
Ayatollah Khamenei drew attention to the fact that the U.S. has refused to provide Iran
with a guarantee that it will not violate its commitments again. He noted that Washington will not shy away from violating its contractual commitments in the same manner that it did in 2018, a move that was completely costless for them. 6 rounds of negotiations have been held so far in the Austrian capital, Vienna, to revive the Iran nuclear deal, which has come to be known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action with the JCPOA. 3 years ago, the U.S., under former President Donald Trump, withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal and branded what it called the Maximum Pressure Campaign against Iran. Now President Joe Biden, who was the Vice President of the United States when the deal was inked, has promised to re-enter the JCPOA and abandon Trump's failed Maximum Pressure Campaign.
Iran's position on the JCPOA and international law has been clear and consistent since the signing of the JCPOA in 2015. And so as such, I don't believe that an incoming Raisi administration or frankly any new incoming Iranian presidential administration would handle the current talks and negotiations any differently.
But so far, he's practically followed the footsteps of his predecessor. President-elect Ebrahim Raisi will be officially sworn in on August 5th. Raisi won the June 18 presidential election in a landslide victory, garnering over 18 million votes. It's widely believed that the foreign policy in Iran has a well-established and large-scale framework. When it comes to the issue of the Vienna talks, Iran's policies are not going to change. Therefore, no fundamental changes are expected in the negotiation process under the next administration. However, analysts believe the next administration needs to bolster the national position of Iran to successfully counter the bullying stance of the U.S. and its allies.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners, welcome to another program of Islamic Upbringing. This is your host Mehdi with brother Abdullah Al-Musawi here at the studio. We're going to be talking about things we can do for our children to provide them with the best and ideal upbringing that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has wanted from us. Brother, welcome to Islamic Upbringing. Thank you for being here.
Yes, wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
It's always a great pleasure, especially when we get to learn things and apply them in our lives practically. In our previous program, we talked about protection that a child needs from us as parents, and it has to be physical and, more importantly, in this day and age, mental. And we talked about the friends that our children make and how they impact their lives, and limiting or supervising our children in that manner. So is brother, are friends the only thing that affect our children's mentality, besides the things we already mentioned, the role that parents have in that field, in that area? What else do we have that we need to be wary of?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. So as we said, when it comes to the mental dangers, there are a lot of ways and a lot of methods that the enemy is now using to brainwash the kids and take them from the right path. So amongst of which,
twist up their ideologies.
Exactly. So amongst of which, we mentioned friends, which are, you know, a big part of our lives because we are social creatures. That's the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created us. And Obviously, we did not go in depth of the topic because of the time that we have. But I'm sure parents could go do a better search of how to choose good friends and to avoid bad friends. The second thing that it creates a lot of danger to the child's mind these days are literally TVs and movies. Movies and TV, I should say, where the kids, and even adults, not just kids, they just sit there silently absorbing whatever comes to them without any objection.
Yeah, that's precise, because the walls are down, there's no two-way communication, and all you do is just take in.
Take in under the pretext of entertainment, right? So
yeah.
I'm being entertained, but I have no idea what I'm swallowing, right? Mm. I remember we have a show with the brother Mu'afi. It's called Point of View, where we discuss movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Among the movies that we discussed was X-Men. X-Men, can't remember which one, which part was it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, they were talking about the dhuhur of the Imam alayhi salam. The only thing they forgot to mention is to call him Al-Mahdi, the evil guy, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole movie was entertaining, full of action. But as a Muslim, or even as a normal person, they embedded the idea in your mind that if someone comes from an ancient time and relives again, which that character did, and he can control the elements and he can control your mind and he can speak to the entire world, because this is the guy was, and this is exactly Imam Mahdi salamullah alayhi in our hadith. Do not believe him, he's an evil man. So that's just brainwashing. Mm. And you, what you think you're being entertained, but the reality is what your mind is being washed. When it comes to kids, it's even more dangerous, because as grown up, sometimes like, you know what, you know, my beliefs, I have my beliefs, and I...
Yeah, and you know, that's just a movie, and you literally might just forget that, and it does not seep in and settle down in your subconscious.
Exactly.
Children is
Children is extremely sensitive. Why? Mm. Because once these ideas become okay to him at a younger age, it's very hard to
get rid of them once they get old.
For example, now... in the last, at least the last 10 years, for example, you see Hollywood, they're putting great emphasis on homosexuality.
LGBT, that is a very, very sensitive and crucial topic we're going to address after this short break. Please stay tuned.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back to Islamica, bringing you talking about protection and psychological protection and ideological protection that our children need. So you mentioned Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's so much talk about Hollywood that we need, but, you know.
Hollywood is just an organization. It's not just not a money-making machine. They have agendas,
right,
that we fail to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we just said before the break, when they're trying to push the envelope of LGBT and homosexuality to kids, that you see it's now it became a trend in the cartoons. And like that, they're starting from from the baseline that it's okay for two characters of the same kind to be in love with each other. So, for example, you see horses, you see Arnold, toys,
dinosaurs, whatever.
Like I've seen, I don't want to name the name of the movies, but it became in the last 5 years, I think they even released a movie where two little kids in a school, first grade, they become
partners,
and they have this sexual. I mean, they don't tell you they are homosexual. They don't tell you they are gay per se, but you automatically understand,
perceive that this is
okay. Mm. And, you know, it's always subconscious. It's always a subliminal messages. And, you know, it's...
You know, what's so evil about this is the same it was with Muawiyah alayhi lana. That Imam Ali alayhi salam said, kalimatul haq wa yuradu biha al-batil. What they say is true, is good, but what they want out of it is evil. Because loving another man in Islam is beautiful.
Mm. Loving your brother.
Loving your brother is beautiful. Yeah. Love in itself is so beautiful. And even Masoom, you have a story when a person said, I like this guy. And the Masoom says, go and tell him that you like him.
Mm.
You know? So when someone comes up to you, what's wrong with loving another man?
Mm.
There's nothing wrong. But the way you see love is twisted. That's not love.
Exactly.
You know?
So that's the problem. Like, they take the concept of love between two genders, and they give it emotion, like the emotion starts to play, and they put hints. If my child sits and watches such a movie, and you know, he just continues and he just jumps on to the next movie and the next movie, by the time he's, you know, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, before even he reached puberty, he, at least if he does not become a homosexual himself, he would accept the notion of homosexuality and the fact that everyone is free to choose whatever they want.
And that's the point.
That's what they want to get at. They don't say you can be gay. You know, your sexuality is up to you. But accept it.
The double standards over here are that they do say that you're free to choose, but you, in reality, you're not letting the people be free to choose. You're instilling that in their mind. Yeah, you're choosing for them and you're making it okay for them. And then you've got this label that, oh, everyone has the right to choose. We're going to return after this break that we have to go on, and please stay tuned, and we'll be back shortly.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Allah will be merciful to his servant for his intense love for his child.
Welcome back, and it's another program of Islamic Upbringing, and we're talking about mental, I don't know, the word is brainwashing, if I'm not wrong. Am I wrong?
Well, you're not wrong at all. It is brainwashing. It is brainwashing, and we need to counter brainwashing with
brainwashing.
That's how it works. For example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's funny, because if you see the Quran, Allah has a beautiful way of trying to embed messages into us by repeating a story and adding extras to it. For example, the story of Adam was repeated a few times in the Quran. The story of Musa repeated, I don't know, over 20 times in the Quran. And every time Allah repeats the story, he adds a bit of information. As you read the Quran from cover to cover, the story of Musa, for example, will sink in your head. And because it keeps repeating, by the time you finish the Quran, the story is complete. Right? And for example, when you read Surah Al-Rahman, فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ, Allah keeps repeating it, meaning what? He wants to instill that idea in your head. And which of God's blessings are you denying? Because it's repetitive. So in a form, in a way, it is brainwashing, but a good type of brainwashing. So not all brainwashing is bad.
It's negative.
So, but in this kind of brainwashing, your soul and your mind lives. In their kind of brainwashing, they kill it. Right. So we said that by the time you reach, before you reach puberty, even if you do not become homosexual yourself, you would accept the concept. Yeah. So we have that. That's the problem. Then they're saying, okay, we don't care, but at least accept it. Where if you see the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, why did he give us a story of Lut and how Allah punished the people of Lut? Was it just a coincidence that even, mind you, back in the day after Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala demolished Lut, homosexuality disappeared? Because Lut, his people came up with it and died with them.
It ended with them.
It wasn't a trend. People wasn't. It wasn't something they would do. It was disgusting to them, right? And even for example, when through Islam and stuff, through that, it was, you know, at a very minor point. But why did the Quran speak about it and gave us so much details? Like very literal. I mean, if I want to go to the tafsir of Lut, it's very detailed.
Yeah, it is.
It's like Allah speaks with highlights, but it's very detailed. Why did Allah have to go through that? If it wasn't to us, saying to us, you need to reject the concept before it began in your mind. Reject it. Do not follow the footsteps of shaitan. So they don't say to you, okay, become homosexual, but they teach your kids.
Step by step.
To accept it. You accept it, next time you don't mind doing it. You know what I mean?
And so it's twisted. If I'm not mistaken, the wife of Prophet Lut, one of the reasons she was not saved was she was all right with that society.
She was okay with the concept, even though she did not indulge in it herself, but she was okay with it, and she used to help them. Right? Yeah. She was like, if men comes to my husband, I will give you a sign.
Yeah.
So she was. This is a lot of Muslims these days. Sadly, they say, "Okay, you know what? I have nothing against you. Actually, I respect you.
You are
homosexual. I respect you.
By the way,
you.
I have I'm a like, friend. You know, yeah, they might become matchmakers.
Yeah, like, no, I don't like you. This is the approach that we should take if we are truly Muslim. Don't expect me
to be all right with that.
Yeah, to be okay with it. No, I'm not okay with it. So this is the thing that we need to be very aware of when it comes to our kids and movies. Because they sit there all day watching movie after movie. And now, not like before. Before you start tapes and CDs and DVDs. And now you have Netflix. And you have, you know, these
millions of
which
millions
means
of
what?
Options.
One after the other continuous.
Yeah.
Right?
There is no
and
stopping.
And they keep updated, you know, all these movies. Like every week, every month, a new movie comes out.
Yeah, and the evil within it also gets updated. Mm. We've reached the end of our show. Unfortunately, and if you've got questions and if you've got suggestions and topics or problems that you've been facing and you want us to highlight those, send in your emails at englishradio@irib.ir. If you've missed out on episodes, parstoday.com, that is parstoday.com. You can find those episodes over there and our social media forms. Call of Islam Radio, Instagram, Twitter, all of the social media. Facebook is with the same name, callofislam.com. Thank you for being here, Brother Abdullah.
It's my pleasure.
We always do get to benefit from you. And until next time, dear listeners and Brother Abdullah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest.
Ministry.
Another unilateral move by the United States once more promises to affect lives of people around the world for the worse, this time in terms of internet freedom. In an expected move on Tuesday, June 22nd, the U.S. Justice Department seized 36 websites with links to the Islamic Republic of Iran and its regional allies for engaging in, quote, disinformation campaigns and malign influence operations, unquote. The move initially arose suspicions of a hack since a disclaimer that said this website has been seized accompanied an Arabic text as the one you can still see on PressTV.com, while State Department spokesman Ned Price refused to comment. The Empire's Justice Department eventually said three of the seized domains belonged to the Iraqi group Kata'ib Hezbollah, while the rest, including Yemeni, Palestinian, and Bahraini outlets in English and Arabic, were supported by the Iranian Islamic Radio and Television Union. The seized websites obviously belonged to outlets of the allied resistance communities, better known as the resistance axis, that Iran supports across the region to counter the influence of the U.S. and regional rivals like Israel and Saudi Arabia. Try to keep a straight face here. The U.S. blacklisted us with designations related to terrorism. I kid you not. The mother of all terrorism, also known as the Empire, said that the American companies are not allowed to provide us with .com and .net domains without special authorization from the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC. U.S. fascist officials can choose to label it however they wish, yet they will never be able to change the fact that this seizure is a clear example of a systematic effort to distort freedom of speech on a global level and silence independent voices in media, which gives us and everyone included in the seizure the full right to pursue the issue through legal channels. While the U.S. may have given itself the ability to exert influence over vast sections of the internet, its actions will for sure have far-reaching ramifications beyond its control. Those unilateral harassment actions will only give credence to arguments of U.S. interference and censoring due to fear of being further exposed by native media in nations they continue to sanction like Iran, occupy like Iraq, and bomb like Yemen. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Amar Osman. more than 30 web domains linked to the axis of resistance, one of which is Press TV, were blatantly seized by U.S. agencies last week. The U.S. seized sites operated inside Iran, Iraq, Yemen,